Hello everyone, my name is Jose Tamayo and I'm going to cover today a very interesting subject which I decided to cover because of the recent issue of the major DNS vulnerability that was just uncovered by some people in the industry, preempted by Dan Kaminsky. Now, I'm not going to cover issues related to what the vulnerability is, but I am going to discuss a few things. And let's get into it right now. I will get into a quick intro, cover a little bit of what DNS is, get into the brief history of DNS, the evolution of DNS, some of that, and then the process that your client uses for querying DNS or doing DNS resolution. Now, introduction. What I am going to cover in this podcast is everything related to the history of DNS and some of its functionality. I am not going to cover requests for comments, or in other words, history of all the RFCs and how DNS got started specifically there. I'm going to leave that for another podcast. So, in this podcast, this is what I would call part one of a series of DNS podcasts that I plan to provide to Blind Cool Tech listeners in the upcoming months or weeks. Now, I'm also not going to cover I am not going to cover particular details of DNS records, such as A records and PTR records, and I'm not going to cover TTL or time to live. This is going to be a future in which I'm going to another part of DNS, which I'm going to cover later on. Now, moving on to DNS and what it is. What is DNS? Now, DNS stands for Domain Name System or Domain Naming System. It was developed around 1983, and I'll get into the history of that a little bit later. And it is a way of providing a name to, in other words, a human readable name to a device on the internet or on a network. In other words, a name to a number, sort of like a phone book that provides names to phone numbers. Now, it bears to say that here that without this system of providing a name to an address, people would have to memorize esoteric or cumbersome numbers in order to remember how to get to certain sites on the internet. And so DNS provides a way to assign a name to a number which can be arbitrary in some cases, or may change often. In terms of how it works, DNS is a name to IP conversion system, or a name to IP reference system. It is a hierarchical database which provides, for example, a pointer. Let's say google.com provides a number which tells your computer, your browser, how to get to google.com using an IP address. An IP is nothing more than Internet Protocol. Internet Protocol is not something I'm going to cover in this podcast. Internet Protocol is something that requires a series of podcasts to cover. Now, in terms of a brief history, moving on to a brief history of DNS. DNS, before DNS existed, there was an organization that maintained a what they called a hosts.txt file. And there's a lot of history before this, so I'm not going to cover the particular history of what occurred before hosts.txt existed. Hosts.txt existed, was created in order to map all network equipment to names on the network. For example, mail server or some other type of machine on the internet at the time. The file, the hosts, that .txt file was hosted in an FTP server, and people that were using the internet at the time would have to download this file to their computer so that their computer could do the lookup locally of name to IP address or the conversion. So the client would have read this hosts file, and this is where hosts came from, hosts.txt, and it would, this host file would have a name and an IP address right next to it, or an address, which is a number, which would allow the client to connect to that particular IP address, just to do the conversion and connect to the particular IP address for the application that was in turn needed. Every time there was an update to the file, and no one knew when the updates occurred, this file had to be downloaded to the local computer. So what would happen is people would do like a nightly download of the hosts.txt file to their computer, and now their computer had the latest information on what was out on the internet. Imagine how large this file started to get before it was realized in 1983 that, you know, hey, we need something that is more scalable and something that is more dynamic. Now, the file was maintained by NIC, which was the Internet Authority at the time, and it contained all the computers that were on the internet at the time. The way this worked is your client at your machine, let's say your Gopher client or in your Unix machine, would actually have a limited set of APIs, application programming interfaces, which would allow for these searches to occur within the hosts.txt file. So your application needed a service out on the internet at the time. Your application would look in this, make a call to the hosts, or actually to the API, which said, I need to get to this server, and it would provide the name. And then the API would go into the hosts.txt file, look up the name, and provide the client with the IP address for that name. And that was the process that occurred at the time. So in other words, that is how DNS worked at the time. Actually, it was no DNS. This was before DNS. So now moving on to the evolution of DNS. Why DNS? Well, it was realized at the time that more and more devices, more people, more organizations were joining this vast thing called the internet. And so this file, hosts.txt file, kept growing and growing. Furthermore, there was a need for people to have their own local equipment referenced by this hosts.txt file. And so DNS was developed or thought about in 1983-1984 in order to provide a scalable, hierarchical, and a type of system that synchronized, that was synchronized across multiple machines in the internet, on the internet. And so this solution was devised, this DNS solution, in which there would be a few, and today there are 13, a few root domain servers which would provide information about the top level domain, which in this case com.com.edu.gov.org.tv and so on. And this system was developed, and this system provided the ability for automatic conversion or referencing of name or conversion from name to IP. So a computer could now look up an IP address or a computer on the network based on name. So such as www.microsoft.com. At the time, of course, it wasn't Microsoft. At the time, it may have been something other than Microsoft. There may have been someone, a university or a government institution at the time, in the early days. So the need also arose to develop DNS so that it would provide subdomain access. And this is the hierarchical nature of DNS. So for example, under the .com domain, I'm sorry about that, folks. My phone started ringing while I was preparing this podcast. But so it took a while. Something had to be developed, and DNS provided the hierarchical a way to have subdomains, a way for people to have their computers within their network addressed by this domain naming system. And so it took, so this is when DNS was developed. Now, in terms of domain, and how DNS works and the domains and all that, the top level domains, you know, again, the .com, .edu, .org, those kind of things are handled by the 13 servers, which are the main servers out on the internet. Originally, there were less than 13, but there are 13 now. In this hierarchy, the second level of domains, let's say Microsoft, is only known by the first level domain, .com. So Microsoft.com, and so on. The third level of domain is only known by the second level of domains, or to the second level, and so on. And this is how DNS records and DNS information is defined. This is what we call subdomains. A subdomain is a domain within a domain in the hierarchy of DNS. So when you look at www.microsoft.com, then you have, within the .com, you have a Microsoft domain, and within Microsoft, you have www subdomain. So Microsoft is a subdomain of .com. www is a further division of Microsoft. So now, moving on to how your client, and I'm going to focus mostly on how your client works, and how it looks up IP addresses, how it does domain name resolution. And the very first thing that the client does is it reads a file on your local drive, and depending on what you have, this file may be located in a different area. I'm not going to be covering these specific areas in this podcast. This is a future for me, and I'm going to be covering more DNS details in a future podcast. So the first step is that the client will read a file called hosts when you enter something on the address bar of your browser. Let's say www.google.com. Your client goes into your host file, reads it, and tries to figure out if www.google.com has been entered in there. If it has not, then your client moves on to the cache, which is in your memory, in your computer's memory. This is a cache that is cleared either by a reboot or manually by you if you needed to. And there are different commands that you can use, for example, in Windows and some other operating systems in order to flush these DNS caches. But in the DNS cache is a list of DNS entries or domains that you have already entered in your browser's address bar. Once you've this domain makes it to your cache, it has your cache gives it a number, and the number is either positive or negative. And I'm going to get into more detail in a little bit about the DNS cache on your client. So if the domain that you've searched for or that you're trying to get to, say www.google.com, is not in your client's memory cache, then your client makes a request to the DNS server that is either manually configured or automatically configured by your computer's TCP/IP or IP stack. In the event that your DNS server does not contain an entry for the domain and subdomain that you're looking for, www.google.com, that DNS server will make a query to a distant DNS server, the next DNS server in its list for that domain, until the domain that you're looking for is found. Now, in terms of the host file, moving on to the host file, the file contains entries that map names to IP addresses. Each line in the host file contains a name separated by a space or a tab and the IP address of that host name out on the internet. So, for example, www.google.com may be 74.125.45.147, something like that. That's how the entry for google.com would look, or www.google.com would look in your host file. www.google.com space and the IP address. Now each line in the host file can be followed by a pound sign or a number sign and then a comment. A number sign typically indicates that a comment is about to begin. So if you wanted to comment something out in your host file, you can precede it by a pound sign or number sign. It's always a good practice to, if you're going to use your host file, it is a good practice to comment out each line that you're going to put in there. Now, people are using the host file these days for preempting of your browser in order to prevent your browser from hitting websites that are not desired. In other words, for malware and all that. Now, moving on to the client's DNS cache. The client's DNS cache will hold every single entry that you have attempted to visit from your browser. Each entry is assigned a number, and a number could be negative or positive. If the number is positive, then the browser has your client has reached this particular domain within the last X amount of time that the cache is set up to expire records. So, for example, if your cache is set for 5 minutes for each record, then the positive number will indicate that in the last X minutes, you went to this website. Let's say www.microsoft.com, and you had success in getting there. And so this is how this entry is kept in there with a positive number. If the entry has a negative number, then that means that you attempted to visit a website or a domain and you were not successful. And so your browser will automatically generate an error when it sees this until the record expires, and that is that may be 5 minutes or so. I believe the positive numbers get 24 hours by default, and the negative numbers get 5 minutes. But don't quote me on that. I'm going to provide another part of this DNS in which I will give you more information about how these records are stored and what is the time to live or the expiration dates of these records within the cache. Now, if the entry that you're looking for, the web page that you're looking for, or the domain you're looking for in your browser is not listed in the DNS cache, then your client knows that, or your computer knows that it needs to go out to your DNS server, your nearest DNS server that is listed in your client's IP configuration. So the DNS server, typically DNS servers nowadays are configured automatically by your computer, unless you are behind a corporate firewall, and in that case, most of the time, is still your client is still configured automatically to visit either a local DNS, which eventually sends you out, or to visit a DNS that is outside of your organization for searching for domains. It is very rare to find static configurations nowadays. The most typical static configurations are with specialized servers and corporate servers within an organization. But your typical client at home is usually automatically configured by your internet service provider or your ISP. Your name servers, your DNS servers, are typically two. This was defined by the original standards, DNS standards bodies, as two for redundancy purposes. If once you reach the DNS server that you've been listed to search for entries on, and that DNS server does not contain the entry for www.google.com, let's say, its job is to visit the next DNS server that it is configured to visit, to ask it for a query for www.google.com. And eventually you'll get a response as long as the domain that you're looking for is registered with one of the servers out on the internet. Now, I've provided a good overview of what DNS is without a lot of details. I think this is a good just touching the tip of the iceberg overview. And if you have any questions or concerns, you feel free to send me an email at jtblas@hotmail.com. I always look forward to your comments. If there's anything that you would like to see covered in a future podcast regarding DNS, I would love to hear from you. Please send me your questions and I will cover them in my next podcast, hopefully, if your questions get to me on time. If not, then I would cover it in a future podcast about DNS. So my email address again is jtblas@hotmail.com. J, T as in Tom, B as in boy, L as in Larry, A as in apple, S as in Sam, @hotmail.com. And I want to thank everyone for listening and for all the great comments. And Larry, thanks for everything. You guys are great. I really appreciate everything. Take care.